And I'll read the verse first. Let's see, we're up to ingenuity. What number is that? 26. So the verse begins, in him reside, and then the different qualities are described, which reside in Krishna. So continuing, in him reside ingenuity, gentility, magnanimity, determination, perfection in all knowledge, proper execution, possession of all objects of enjoyment, joyfulness, immovability, fidelity, fame, worship, pridelessness. Then, purport, as far as the beauty of the Lord is concerned, he has some special features that distinguish him from all other living beings. And over and above that, he has some special attractive, beautiful features by which he attracts the mind of even Radharani, the supermost beautiful creation of the Lord. He is known, therefore, as Madana Mohan, or one who attracts the mind of even Cupid. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu has scrutinizingly analyzed other transcendental qualities of the Lord and affirms that Lord Sri Krishna is the absolute supreme personality of Godhead, Parabrahman. He is omnipotent by his inconceivable energies, and therefore he is the Yogeshvara, or the supreme master of all mystic powers. Being the Yogeshvara, his eternal form is spiritual, a combination of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. The non-devotee class cannot understand the dynamic nature of his knowledge because they are satisfied to reach up to his eternal form of knowledge. All great souls aspire to be equal in knowledge with him. This means that all other knowledge is ever insufficient, flexible, and measurable, whereas the knowledge of the Lord is ever fixed and unfathomable. Srila Sutta Goswami affirms in the Bhagavatam that although he was observed by the citizens of Dwarka every day, they were increasingly anxious to see him again and again. The living beings can appreciate the qualities of the Lord as the ultimate goal, but they cannot attain the status quo of such equality. The material world is a product of the Mahat Tattva, which is a state of the Lord's dreaming condition in his yoga, nidra, mystic slumber in the causal ocean. And yet the whole creation appears to be a factual presentation of his creation. This means that the Lord's dreaming conditions are also factual manifestations. He can therefore bring everything under his transcendental control, and thus whenever and wherever he does appear, he does so in his fullness. The Lord, being all that is described above, maintains the affairs of the creation, and by his so doing, he gives salvation to his enemies who are killed by him. He is attractive even to the topmost liberated soul, and thus he is worshipable even by Brahma and Shiva, the greatest of all demigods. Even in his incarnation of Purusha avatar, he is the Lord of the creative energy. The creative material energy is working under his direction, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. He is the control switch of the material energy, and to control the material energy in the innumerable universes, he is the root cause of innumerable incarnations in all the universes. There are more than 500,000 incarnations of Manu in only one universe, besides other incarnations in different universes. In the spiritual world, however, beyond the Mahat Tattva, there is no question of incarnations, but there are plenary expansions of the Lord in different Vaikunthas. The planets in the spiritual sky are at least three times the number of those within the innumerable universes in the Mahat Tattva. And all the Narayan forms of the Lord are but expansions of his Vasudeva feature. And thus he is Vasudeva, Narayan, and Krishna simultaneously. He is Sri Krishna Govinda, Hari Murari, Hinata Narayana, Vasudeva, all in one. His qualities, therefore, cannot be counted by anyone, however great one may be. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane. There is a saying from the Bible, God is great, and we agree with that. But in other scriptures, how great God is not described. How does he work in the material world? What are his different energies? What are his incarnations? This greatness of God is not very much known. And unless you know the greatness of God, Krishna, then you will not be able to approach him. We see the picture of Krishna with the flute, and the non-devotee, and even the devotee, he should not take it that he is just a very beautiful young boy, a beautiful young man. But this, although that he is also, Nava Yovanam Cha, his form is always youthful because one of his opulences is beauty. But this beautiful form, Krishna, he is the cause of all causes. We sing in the Govinda prayers, Sarva Karana Karana. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. Ishvara Parama. There are many different gods, Ishvara, but the supreme Ishvara is Krishna. What is his nature? Satchit Ananda Vigraha. He is Sat, he's eternal, he's Chit, he has all knowledge. Ananda, he's blissful. God must not be morose. He's full of happiness. And Vigraha, he has a form. His form is composed of Satchit Ananda. Not like this body. Earth, water, fire, air in some combination. And this body is Asat, Achit, and Nirananda. You cannot find eternity, bliss, and knowledge so long as you're in this material body. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that people, they aspire to be Satchit Ananda. Sometimes somebody calls himself Satchit Ananda, but that's all right to aspire to be Satchit Ananda, and actually you can be, but not that you can become equal to Ishvara Parama Krishna. He is the supreme personality of Godhead, and we can experience that eternity, bliss, and knowledge in our own spiritual body in relationship to him. So our whole point of Krishna consciousness is to see the Lord as Krishna, Govinda, and to appreciate that he is the supreme truth, and to awaken our relationship with him by hearing and take up devotional service under the spiritual master, and finally develop spontaneous love for Govinda. So in order to do so, we have to hear about the greatness of Govinda, which is being described in these qualities. Like there was one quality, everything that is impossible is possible in him, and he has all knowledge. So no one can equal these things. Nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, eko bahanam, yo viridati kaman. Ekala ishvara Krishna, ara sabha britya. There again, the word ishvara. Ekala ishvara. Ultimately, there's only one ishvara at the top. Then if there's one ishvara, ishvara parama, then actually, although the others may be called ishvaras, they're actually servants to the supreme God. He's a God in some capacity, someone is. Just like the man, he's the Ishvara of his family. But then when he goes to work, his boss is his Ishvara. And that boss, the head of the company, is his Ishvara. And the president of the country is his Ishvara. So one who has a higher Ishvara than he's a servant to that person. Although he may have some limited control over others. So Ekala Ishvara, there's only one Ishvara, finally. Who's that? Ekala Ishvara Krishna. This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishnadas Kaviraj concludes. Ara Sabha Vritya. All others are his servants. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj goes on to explain how even the Vishnu expansions are serving Krishna. They're serving Krishna and by creating the universes. Mahavishnu, from his breathing comes all the universes. And that's a service to Krishna. Because the living beings, they want to live in the material world. So they have to have planet. They have to have activities. So Vishnu creates the material world. And that's a service to Govinda. And when that Mahavishnu lies down, his incarnation of Shesha, Ananta, forms the serpent-like bed for the Lord and hood, umbrella. This is a service to Krishna. This is like a service we can understand, like a bodily service. Then Radharani, she is serving Krishna in his pleasure potency. Everyone is serving Krishna. So we worship this. We worship Govinda, the cowherd boy, who is tending the Surabhi cows, attended by thousands of Lakshmis or goddesses of fortune, whose mother is Jasoda, his father is Nanda, and they're thinking of him, of course, as subordinate son. But we should always understand that he is the Ishvara Parama Krishna. At the same time, in his topmost feature, he is Govinda. So either way, we shouldn't make a mistake. When we see Govinda, we shouldn't think he's a boy. And when we hear of God, Krishna, we shouldn't think that he can't be this boy, Govinda. Lord Brahma was wandering in his universe during Krishna's appearance in this world. And he saw Krishna seated taking lunch with his cowherd friends. So he thought, here is Krishna, I've heard of Krishna, the Supreme Truth, that he is appearing within my universe. Of course, I am the controller of the universe. But he saw that these activities were appeared very humble. So he wanted to see, actually, how is Krishna God? Therefore, he played that trick and stole the calves and cows and boys of Krishna. So Krishna immediately started to show his mystic potency from the form of Krishna. Even the universal form, as shown in the Bhagavad Gita, that comes from Krishna. Krishna is talking to Arjuna on the chariot. Krishna's in his two-armed form. And Arjuna says, Krishna, for others who may not understand, I want to see your divine manifestation as the Virata Rupa. Please give me the vision. So Krishna then gives Arjuna the special vision to see the Vishwarupa, or the universal form of Krishna, in which all the universe and all the demigods and all time and space and all the functions are seen within the body of the Lord. So this form is so vast, and it is filled with so much of the destruction, which is the material end of the material world, that Arjuna became very much afraid. And he said, Krishna, now I become very fearful seeing this form of you. Please forgive me for behaving with you as a friend. Now I see that you are actually the supreme universe. So then Krishna again returned first to his four-armed form as Vishnu, and then he returned to his two-armed form as Krishna, and concluded that Arjuna, this form of mine, this two-handed form of the Supreme Lord, this is very, very rare for anyone to ever see. So, therefore, the universal form comes from Krishna, but people often attach more importance to the universal form because it is so vast, it is so fearful, and they think that God is like that. It must be the biggest thing, the greatest thing, the obviously more powerful thing. And when they hear that God is a person even, they say, well, how can he be a person? A person is limited. But we understand that God is unlimited, and he's unchanging. He's all-powerful. So you show me Krishna, he does not appear to be all-powerful. But they're not intelligent as to what God is. Prabhupada told of some person, European person, who he was acquainted with, who traveled around India without any previous knowledge of Vedic truth and the demigods and the supreme. You want to wake him up? Wake up. So he would go to the different temples. I went to the temple of many, especially different temples of Kali and Durga and other demigods. And then he went to the temple of Krishna. And so he later informed his friend, or when he went to the temple of Krishna, he said, oh, I understand, this is the temple of God. This is actually God. He said, why do you conclude? He said, because in all the other temples, I see the deity is engaged in some kind of work. And it's often ghastly work, like Kali has the chopper and she's chopping the heads of the demons. And sometimes the demigod has a ghastly feature, or he has a working attitude, service. So, but here I see that Krishna, he has nothing to do, and he is simply playing his flute. So this, even though it's an unschooled interpretation, this is very true, that if one is Bhagavan, then if there's work to be done, he is not going to do it, because he's God. Even the top executive, he's not doing all the laborious activities in the factory. He may not even be in the factory. He's off in another country vacationing. And at the same time, he knows everything that is going on in his business. So God is like that. He's independent, Swarat. And he's all beautiful. And he's enjoying in spiritual pastimes. So apparently Brahma misunderstood that he thought Krishna should be, as he is in Vaikuntha, showing his supreme majesty, and where everyone approaches him in awe and reverence. All the Shrutis personified, all the energies of the Lord, they're all lined up, and they're praying and chanting hymns constantly, and he's being glorified and glorified. And actually Krishna finds that this glorification is not so pleasing. It's pleasing, but there's something more pleasing than to be praised in Vaikuntha. And that is to be at home in Vrindavan with his intimate devotees, with whom he exchanges in pastimes that are more familiar. So that sometimes even Krishna takes the subordinate position when Krishna wrestles with his cowherd friends. That is his sport. So sometimes when they wrestle, the winner gets to ride on the back of the losing parties. So sometimes in this wrestling, Krishna's party loses. And so Krishna has to take one of the cowherd boys like Sudam or Subal or Sridam on his shoulders. And this he likes very much. And they are not standing in awe and reverence of him, but they say, all right, Krishna, you've been defeated, now you carry me. But there's all love there. There is more love there, in fact, than even in Vaikuntha. And there's more love there than the way Krishna is worshipped by the Brahmin who is meditating on his feature as universal form or what to speak of the impersonal form, where he is practically insulting Krishna in his personal form. So this form is supreme. And those who are, not only that form is supreme, but those devotees, they are the supreme devotees who can exchange with Krishna like that. Idam satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena maya sukhanam naradarakena sikham vicharu krita punya punya. This is a verse by Sukadeva Goswami, who is appreciating the position of the cowherd boys in relation to Krishna. He says that person who is the supreme truth, he's seen by some as the supreme truth, the Brahman. And he is also, in that way he's declared in the Upanishads, the all-pervading truth. That all-pervading truth, who some see as the supreme master, and who some see as ordinary person. There are different ways to see God. But he's actually the supreme truth. He's actually the master of everyone. And it's a fact that some people see him as an ordinary man. But that absolute truth, he is being, he's the friend, the pal of the cowherd boys who are playing with him. So I can understand that they have achieved this intimacy with the Supreme, Krita Punya Punya, only after accumulating heaps and volumes of pious activities. Krishna can be seen in many ways. When Krishna entered the wrestling arena of Kamsa, he was seen in different ways. He was 16 years old, boy come from Vrindavan, to wrestle with these big, powerful wrestlers, and Kamsa was prepared to kill him. And there were many, many people in the arena. So the wrestlers, although Krishna was relatively small, yet they knew that he had mystic power, and they saw Krishna as a thunderbolt, as death personified. They didn't think he looked very sweet. They saw that he's going to kill us. He's very powerful. But the elderly women, who had come from Vrindavan and those who were in Mathura, they saw Krishna like a son. And the young cowherd girls, they saw him as the most beautiful youth. And the cowherd boys saw him as their friend. So he was seen in many different ways by the worshipper. And they're all valid. Yaya tam mam prapadyante tams tatava bhajami aham. As you approach me, so I reciprocate, Krishna says. But his topmost feature, that is his personal form. We describe the universal form. So after seeing that universal form, then Arjuna begins in the 12th chapter, inquiring from Krishna. Krishna, you know my attachment to you is in the personal relationship. But can you let me know, is this the topmost feature? Or what about those who don't worship you as a person? They worship God as impersonal Brahman, all-pervading, unmanifested, imperceivable, beyond the senses. Or is it better to do that or to worship you in your personal form? And Krishna very plainly, clearly says that of the two, to worship me in my personal form, this is the most perfect. If one worships me in the impersonal form, then after performing great austerities for a long, long time and being equal towards all living beings, he in the end can also come to this conclusion of my personal form. In other words, he has to also come to bhakti. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavanmam prapajate vasudeva sarvami tisamahatma sudulabha. He has to take many, many lives and he can finally understand Krishna in his personal form. So, the personal form contains all the incarnations, and the universal form is but a fragmentary expansion of the expansion of the expansion of the original form of Govinda. Nevertheless, Brahma was confused because he didn't see the majesty. He saw just Krishna and friends, So he misunderstood. But then Krishna showed him, after he stole the boys and the calves, then Krishna expanded into those calves and boys and cows. And they were all Vishnu expansions. And all, when those cows and calves and boys returned to their homes, the mothers loved the boys more than they ever did before. Previous to that, of course, every mother loves her boy, but all the residents of Vrindavan, they loved Krishna more than their own son even. They could not help, because he is the soul of all souls. You love Krishna like you love your own self, because you are intimately connected with Krishna. Everyone loves Krishna, even though it's covered. So Krishna was living in their village. They loved him even more than their sons. But that day when their sons came home, they suddenly felt a new surge of love for their sons, because that son was actually a Vishnu expansion. Krishna had duplicated himself, just like each son of every mother in the village. They didn't know it was Krishna. They thought it was their son. Brahma thought he had kidnapped the sons, but Krishna expanded to replace them, so the mothers and fathers would not be sorry that my son has been kidnapped and disappeared. And then when the calves went to the cows became more affectionate to those calves, even though they had already finished giving them, they had finished milking from the cow. They were old enough. But now they again felt great affection for those calves, because the calf was Vishnu. So anyway, Brahma became afraid that he had kidnapped. He returned to see Krishna, and Krishna expanded from his body. He could see the form of Govinda, and yet he saw coming all Shivas and Brahmas and calves and cows and Vishnu incarnations and all time and space. And Brahma fell down flat like a golden rod before Krishna, made dandavats and made his beautiful prayers in the 10th canto, the prayers of Lord Brahma. And he admitted at that time that, Krishna, you appear before me as a village boy. Your flute is tucked in your belt, and you're holding in your hand some nice foodstuff your parents have given you, with yogurt and fruit, and you're giving the food to the other boys. You appear to be not an educated person, just a boy from the village. But I understand, because I've just seen. I was dull, but you had to show me. I see that you, although you're a village-looking boy, Govinda, you're actually God. So I don't understand your body. Your body is inconceivable. Although you have medium size and you have delicate features, yet you have inconceivable potency. So this we have to understand, that God has inconceivable potency. Krishna is not limited, because from that form, which appears to be like a boy, he has unlimited power. It's not that power has to be displayed like Atlas. We see in the myth of Atlas, he's holding the earth on his shoulders. And so he's very, very strong, like a weightlifter. And even then, all his muscles are straining to hold up the big planet. So if you see, oh, he's more powerful than Krishna. No, Krishna's not straining. Krishna doesn't work that way. He has inconceivable power. So you cannot even understand his body. Sometimes when there's a big prize fight coming up, they list the figures of each. This man, his bicep is so many inches, and the champion and the challenger, his biceps are so many inches. The champion's chest is so many inches. The challenger's chest is so many inches. He weighs so many pounds. He weighs so many pounds. But you can't weigh Krishna like that. He's inconceivable power. He has so much power to vanquish everyone. So Brahma said, you have inconceivable power in this form of Krishna. Even Putana, when Krishna was 3 months old, she was going to kill Krishna. She had smeared her breast with poison. But she looked down at Krishna and understood, this baby, sleeping so peacefully with his eyes closed, I can see that he has the power to destroy the whole universe. So she hesitated. But Krishna, by his yoga maya, he made a very peaceful, infantile feature. Come on, you be my nurse. You can give me your milk. And that way, then she went ahead, even though she had an intuition that this is not an ordinary child. And so she tried to poison him in that way, and he sucked out her life air. killed her. So, we have no experience of such a powerful child, of such a beautiful youth, of such an all-powerful youth, and that is Krishna, the supreme truth. So in both ways, we do not take the form of Krishna cheaply, and neither do we think that Krishna should come in his form and dance before us. But he does come kindly in the Archa Vigraha. He shows us his form. And in the Shastra, he tells us about himself, and Vyasadeva tells us about Krishna. And Krishna comes fully, personally, with all his characteristics in the sound of his name, Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Oh, you look very wonderstruck. Did you see something wonderful in the water? And Akura said, there is nothing more wonderful than seeing you two, Krishna and Balaram. Seeing you, what else is wonderful? Because he had seen in the water that the Mahavishnu was coming from Krishna and Balaram. So seeing the form of Krishna, they saw Krishna every day, but they never grew tired. Krishna consciousness is not hackneyed. But we have to earn that kind of vision. That we can do. We're in the neophyte stage. But if we, without trying to jump sentimentally beyond that stage before we are deserved, we have to regularly serve. Now, Gaur Nitai are here to be worshipped. So ecstatic love is reached by the regulative process, serving them punctually, serving them with nice food and dress as far as you can arrange. In all our worship, it should be like that. Very steady, very regulated, very faithful, following the order of the spiritual master. If you wake up early in the morning and you don't feel spontaneous love to go and serve, and see the deity, still you do it out of obligation. That is called Vaidhi Bhakti. And only in that way can you regularly progress and attain the stage where you will wake up and you want to get up, you want to chant Hare Krishna. That will not take very long. And then more and more we will understand and become attracted to the features of Krishna and the characteristics of Krishna as they're described here. But if you don't regularly hear about Krishna, then how can you expect to reach the spontaneous stage? You won't know anything about Krishna. You have to hear about Krishna in parampara and take up his service. Even if we go to hear the, especially they like, people like to cheaply hear the esoteric, intimate parts of the 10th canto, Krishna and the gopis, although they don't do devotional service or lead a purified life, then you'll misunderstand Krishna. But if you serve all day long, either cleaning in the temple, or cooking in the temple, or going out to preach, then if you in the evening you hear about Krishna, because you're serving so nicely, Krishna will let you understand. He promises. Tesham satata nikchanam vajatam priti purvakam didami buddham yogimtam yenamam upayantite. To those who worship me with love, I give the intelligence how they can come to me. Worship with love means to serve Krishna. So let us be very eager to know how Krishna is inconceivable, how he's all beautiful, and all these qualities. Let us be eager to meet with Krishna, to serve Krishna, but do it by the bona fide process of serving the order of the spiritual master and hearing about Krishna in the cyclic succession. And then be confident of the success. It will come. So we'll stop. Are there any questions? Those two men are not here who are asking all the questions. Yes.
When this relationship, the relationship between the disciples and the teacher must begin?
When does it begin?
Yes.
Well, it begins when they meet, and the disciple starts to hear with a little faith. In other words, it doesn't begin only at initiation time. He's initiated because by that time he already accepts that the spiritual master is representative of God. But it begins at the very beginning they meet. I've told in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, the first volume, how Srila Prabhupada went to meet his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswat. He didn't even want to meet him. He had a friend who said, there's a very qualified sadhu here in town, in Calcutta, Gaudiya Math, follower of Lord Chaitanya. You please come and see. And Srila Prabhupada tells the story. He said, no, I've seen many sadhus. And his sadhus used to come to his father's home. Sometimes they would smoke. So he wasn't impressed. The man said, no, he's not like that kind of sadhu. You please come. So reluctantly, he went up to the roof of the building, the Gaudiya Math. And as soon as he went and met his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked him, before there were practically formalities of greetings exchanged, he said, you are an educated young man. Why don't you preach this Krishna consciousness to the Western world? So right away, in a seed form, he got the idea of his whole mission. And he felt after that first meeting that actually he is my spiritual master. I compiled that in the book that Prabhupada said afterwards. Actually, from that time, I accepted him as my guru. Not officially, but I accepted him in my heart. So it's like that. Yes.
If I put the planets, a specific number, or is it a limitless number of planets?
Limitless. Each planet is limitless.
So how is compassion with the material created?
Three-quarter? Well, one time Srila Prabhupada told us that because the mind can't grasp that even one planet has got limitless dimensions, and there are limitless numbers of planets, and the spiritual world is expanding. So we may take an impersonal attitude toward it, that is, I just can't understand it at all. And the material world is infinitesimal in comparison. But he said that the acharyas have given this a broad mathematical figure to give you the idea, at least, that one is much, much bigger. It's much, much bigger than this material world. But yes, in the mathematics of the unlimited, you can't say three quarters and one quarter, because that three quarter, one part of it is unlimited. So how can it be three quarter? So it's a way to fix your mind on the unlimited. Just like the example is given. If you want to see the moon in the sky is very big and you may not be able to see it right away. So you say that you can fix your vision on the moon by looking through the branches of the tree. Someone says, where is the moon tonight? You say, look over, see the mango tree in the backyard? Look through the top branches. There it is. So it is not that the moon is like another mango on the top branch of the tree, but actually it's vast and it's very distant. But the tree is like a pointer. So the material examples we sometimes give of something that you know, that Krishna is so beautiful. Oh, how beautiful is he? His eyes are as beautiful as the full-blooming lotus. So that is the most beautiful thing of a flower in this world. So we compare it to Krishna, so you get some idea. They're not imaginary, but the fact is we have to try to understand, which is sometimes beyond us, the beauty of Krishna, the number of Vaikuntha planets, the size of the Vaikuntha planets. You need to have expanded consciousness. You need to be there to actually understand. And even then, you cannot understand everything. So these are like looking at the moon through the branches of the tree. Otherwise, we can simply say, if you'll accept it, that the spiritual world is unlimited. that Krishna is more beautiful than anything. But to help you, we can give some example. Because the mind is so much rooted within this material world. If we say Krishna is very, very beautiful, you'll think, well, he may be beautiful, but he's not as beautiful as my girlfriend. But then we'll specifically say, Krishna is more beautiful than millions of cupids. So yes, he's more beautiful than anyone you know.
Prabhupada.
Yes.
Do you practice any kind of yoga besides bhakti
yoga? No, because it's not necessary. The yoga is like steps on a ladder. So the bhakti yoga, they're also valid. But bhakti yoga is the topmost. This is concluded by Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna does teach the other forms of yoga. He teaches in the sixth chapter, Astanga yoga, starting with asana, pranayama. Each step is described how you have to do it. And if you'll notice there, if you aspire to practice that rather than bhakti yoga, it's also very, very difficult. What man in this age can do it strictly according to the rules and regulations? So anyway, aside from the fact that it's practically impossible to do, still, that yoga leads. Yogi nam api sarvesham mat gatanantaratmana shradhavan bhajate yomam sa me yukta tamo mataha. Krishna says, of all yogis, he who links with me through by worshipping me in loving devotional service, he is the highest in yoga and most intimately connected with me. So on that advice of Krishna and Arjuna, Krishna taught Arjuna asana, pranayama, and Arjuna said, I can't do this, it appears too difficult. And he was very, very qualified. He was a friend of Krishna. But he felt he could not do it. And then Krishna said, in your case, you are doing another method, which is the topmost method. So for this present age, this bhakti yoga is very available to the persons in this age who have other duties to do, and in any case have short life duration, short power of concentration. We should chant Hare Krishna and engage your works, the fruit of your works, in the service of Krishna. This is bhakti yoga. If you want to do some exercise for your physical health, that's a different thing. You can practice hatha yoga, you can practice push-ups or anything, ride a bicycle. That's physical health. But if we're trying to link with God, this bhakti yoga is the yoga.
Anyway, I practice Kundalini yoga. And I do some spiritual visions in my vision. What do you think about that?
Well, we have nothing to say against it or about it, but we just...
I also do bhakti yoga.
Then we just want to encourage you to keep coming here and hearing about Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna. And then Krishna, in your heart, he'll reveal to you more and more the nature of bhakti yoga. And then you can see what we're saying.
Have you ever got the vibration of the syllable Om?
Yes. Every morning we're chanting, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Your physical body, do you get it from it?
We're interested in spiritual body. Right.
So you're supposed to get vibrations out, so you can practice that.
We're getting the vibrations. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. The Hare Krishna vibration is coming from the spiritual world. We're feeling it in the physical body, in the subtle body, in the spiritual body. Did you see the boys dancing yesterday when the curtain opened and Gorni Thai was there? The whole place was full of vibrations. Blissful vibrations. Everyone was...
What kind of vibration is this? That's,
that's your vibration. And our vibration is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare. Let's take some prasadam. Thank you. Hare Krishna.